Selling Show is pre-recorded. Good evening, and welcome to the Perpetual Notion Machine. Last week was the 12th annual Wisconsin Science Festival. The statewide celebration included hundreds of events for all kinds of ways for the public to engage with science. The event ended last Sunday after a 7-day run, and tonight we'll recap some of the events that were part of the Wisconsin Science Festival. First up, Science on the Square. Perpetual Notion Machine producer Dominic Ross headed downtown last Friday to experience some of the science activities on view around the Capitol and State Street. Here's some of what he found.
Sure, yeah, I'm Sam Mulrooney. I'm the operations manager of the Wisconsin Science Festival and incoming director. So the Science Festival has been going on for 12 years. It's a statewide celebration of science, so there's events happening all over Wisconsin during this week-long festival. So this year we have over 600 event occurrences in 48 of Wisconsin's 72 counties. So things from nature walks to pub talks and everything in between. It's a great way to celebrate Wisconsin and being curious. So.
And how is, so we're here at the, you know, combined night market science festival event. How has this been organizing this, and what is it like compared to, because I think there's a change sort of from the past, right?
Yeah, sure. So Science on the Square is a partnership with the Madison Central Business Improvement District. This is the 5th year of Science on the Square, and it's kind of evolved since year one. And it's a way to kind of bring science to where our community is, and kind of fusing these two events, the Madison Night Market and Science on the Square together, has worked very well in just sparking people that are out and about downtown Madison to be curious and do science as well. So it's a good way to support local businesses and to just work and learn together, yeah.
Could you tell me just like a little bit about what's here and, you know, what kind of different topics and things are at the Science Festival and at Science on the Square?
Sure, yeah. So each year for the Wisconsin Science Festival, we try and feature on a certain topic. This year we are, as a nod to the International Year of Glass, focusing on glass and all of the ways it's involved in science and art and technology. So we have lots of fun things, not only at Science on the Square related to glass, but also at a lot of the statewide events throughout Wisconsin as well. So here at Science on the Square, there's things from geology to physics, you know, all the way up and down State Street. And we have robotics club, we have the chemistry. It's just a really good assortment of lots of different science disciplines all blended into one. So we like to bring in as many groups, student orgs, and research labs that we can to promote their science and their research and what they're doing in a really fun, accessible way. So.
Very cool. And if people, so by the time they're hearing this, people will have missed it. But if people want to learn about this in the future or learn more about, you know, what was here, where should they find out?
So citizen science is all about people who are curious about something in their lives and they want to collaborate with scientists and people around the world to actually impact real research and learn something for themselves too. So it's usually about something that you care about. SciStarter.org is the organization I work with, and they have basically the database of all citizen science projects. They have thousands that go in into the website, and you can find different projects you might be interested in. There's stuff, there's projects for like medical research. There's one on here that's for Alzheimer's research. And there are projects for biodiversity, like iNaturalist, which is the BioBlitz that's going on for the Wisconsin Science Festival. There are projects through NASA and space-related projects, like Search or Explore for Exoplanet Finder or something. I don't. There's a lot of different names. Cloud Spotter is my favorite. I literally just like find clouds on Mars. Super fun. There's one I mentioned that I don't remember if it was recording. That was social media for climate change. You can find a project for pretty much everything. I think there's one where you literally just make sourdough bread and you get to learn about microorganisms, and we don't actually know all that much about like dough starter or like sourdough bacteria biomes or whatever, and so you can send that information in too, and it's pretty cool. So yeah, there's a whole ton. It's all about education and getting everyone involved in science, even when they don't think they can, because they're not a scientist at this point.
So we, Ice Cube, were an astrophysics experiment at the South Pole. So most telescopes look at like light in different wavelengths. We study different particles called neutrinos. Neutrinos come from like deep space, like from stuff like supernovas, black holes, stuff like that. Yeah, so they come from like wherever in space, like galaxy cores and stuff, and they come all the way to the South Pole. They interact in the ice at the South Pole, and they produce a lot of light. So we capture that light with like about 5,000 of these detectors. We call them DOMs. This acts as like a human eyeball. So it collects all that light, processes it, and transmits it to the surface. So with that information, you can tell, okay, how much energy did the neutrino have? That's basically what we do. And this is sort of like, that's like a picture of us drilling like the holes in the South Pole. So you can see we have like strings of these DOMs going in. Yeah, this is like some of the cold weather gear. Do you want to try this, Mitch? Is it warmer?
You have to wear.
Yeah, you got to wear this at the South Pole. And like we have these are extreme cold weather, or they call them bunny boots. Basically, these are like double layered, and you have to like fill them up with air and stuff. But like when it gets to like minus 70 degrees in the polar winter, you need this sort of stuff. But that's honestly when it's like the prettiest. You see all the auroras and stuff.
So you have to go to this extremely harsh climate to detect neutrinos.
Yeah.
Why is that interesting?
Why neutrinos?
Yeah.
Okay. So the thing is, when you look at very high energy events in the universe, very high energy like catastrophic events like supernovas and stuff. Now you do get a lot of photons, a lot of light, but at the highest energies, those photons can't make it to the Earth. But neutrinos can. They tend to like pass through most things without like any attenuation. Most things are just transparent to them. So they tell you a lot about what the source condition was like. And also neutrinos are neutral. They don't get deflected or anything by any magnetic fields and stuff in the universe. They just point back exactly where they were produced. So, like, when we see something from, say, that point in the sky, we can, send an alert to all the other telescopes, like NASA satellites and stuff like that, and be like, hey, we saw something. Do you also see something? And if we both do, that tells us something about the class of source we just looked at. So, we're sort of like, it's like astrophysics nowadays is more like of a collaborative effort, because everyone benefits when we all, like, work together.
Well, we have some pipe cleaners that represent the hair cells that are in our ears, and this is what allows us to hear sounds. So normal, healthy hair cells should stand up straight like this, and if we listen to too many sounds that are too loud for an extended period of time, then our hair cells will bend over and they won't pop back up. And once they're bent over like this, we can't hear as well anymore, and it's permanent. You can't get them back. So it's really important to protect our ears. So we have a bunch of earplugs that we're giving out today to help protect our ears. And then as far as marshmallows, we have these little kits where you can make your own hair cell. And so the marshmallow is the cell body, the pretzels are the stereocilia, which are the hair cells that sit on top of the hair cell. And then a skittle, which is the cell nucleus. So this kind of shows you what the inside of your ear looks like, but on a much bigger level. It's very microscopic.
Cool. And so you're also checking out people's ears here. How is that? And if you get a lot of kids out here, do their ears look better than like older people?
It completely depends. Everyone has very different ears. We do see some people with very straight ear canals, some people have very curvy ear canals, and we've seen a lot of earwax, no earwax. Some people have scarring on their eardrum, and that's typical if they had ear infections when they were a kid, or tubes to help prevent ear infections, which is really common. So we've seen some of that. We've had mostly kids, but there's definitely some adults who are very curious what their ears look like. But it's fun to look in, because we tell them, like, when are you going to have the opportunity to actually see what the inside of your ear looks like? besides this because we have it right on the computer. So.
Right. Very cool. And who are you all?
We're the UW, we're part of the UW Audiology Graduate Program, and we also have a clinic within our program. It's the UW Speech and Hearing Clinic. So we're in the audiology field, so we're grad students. We're currently in our second year. There's a few first years here, and this is part of an outreach. But we see patients in our clinic. We do hearing tests. We give out hearing aids, all that good hearing protection stuff. But yeah, we're just part of the doctorate program.
Okay.
Yeah, sure. So we're a partnership today with the Global Health Innovation Club and the Biomedical Engineering Society. We're here today to just tell the community about what UW-Madison students and different registered student orgs are doing, how to promote learning, collaboration, service, and how we can use these different types of principles in anything from like super high-end like publication research down to like what kids can do to be able to get involved.
Yeah, and you have some demos set up here.
Yeah.
Could you tell me or try to describe it as best you can?
Sure. Do you want to describe this?
Yeah. So one of the activities that we're doing once a year, if you look over here, we're doing a toy tuning activity. So basically, we re-engineer toys for children with tactile disabilities. So there's like a bunch of little buttons on these toys usually, but you know, if you have tactile disabilities, it can be hard to use. So we just put one big button on it. You can also put some sort of like other motion pad on there. We're also looking at Bluetooth capabilities, and we usually do that around Christmas, so we re-engineer those toys and give it out to the community for those children. Then over here we have a little bit different demo. We have a super absorbent polymer, which is the same thing as diaper polymer, and we're just putting in little baggies with water and just showing its capabilities, both with diapers, and then there's also been research done on how that these can be relevant to like help with oil spills and clean up oil spills. But yeah, just a couple activities that we're
doing. Is there anywhere where people can learn more about what you're doing?
Yeah, for sure. We have an Instagram. It's the Global Health Innovation Club on Instagram, and also BMES is the other Instagram handle. And if they are a UW student, they can go on the Wisconsin Involvement Network, which is where all of the registered student orgs are. They can look us up, ask if they'd like to get involved in any way.
Yeah, so
we're scientists
in two different labs at UW-Madison in the soils department, so the Friedman and the Whitman labs. And we're out here doing outreach for, it's one of our like priorities as lab is to help get the science out to the people who are using it. So yeah, we have some demonstrations of what things live in soil. So some fungi, some mushrooms that people are looking at under the microscope, and then an example of what earthworms do to soil. Yeah.
Very cool. Okay, you're very popular here, so I don't want to take too much of your time. Thank you.
I am Jevin Lordy, and I am here at Science Festival with Deeper Than Data podcast to record stories from people visiting here about what their experience with science is.
Okay, very cool. What kinds of stories are you getting so far? What kind of things do people volunteer for?
Yeah, it's really interesting because some people are really forthcoming and some people we have to kind of like pull it out of them, but they have like really great science tidbits or experiences and a lot of fun interviews with kids where they're just like, I love science and it's great. So we've gotten sort of the whole gamut, and the best I think is when we find people that like initially say, I don't have anything, and then they have just like the best stories. Like there was a guy earlier, we keep bringing up this example, where he was like, I don't have anything, and then he ended up having built a car that runs on salt water. So like, that's so cool. Things like that, it's really fun nuggets to pull out. It's a weird way to phrase that, but yeah, really interesting anecdotes.
Yeah, that's awesome. Tell me more about this podcast.
Yeah, so Deeper Than Data is a podcast run by Ben Rush, who's not here right now. He's getting a hot chocolate break. But he talks to scientists and to get their story, their failures, their successes, their challenges. He really wants to hear about the whole story journey of their science and sort of normalize that it's what it takes and that it's not just an easy path full of success, and that these are human beings, and along the way they have lives and challenges that they're dealing with.
That was PNM producer Dominic Ross recording out in the field in downtown Madison last Friday during Science on the Square. You're listening to the Perpetual Notion Machine. Tonight, we're recapping the Wisconsin Science Festival, which ran all of last week. One characteristic of the science festival is that there's always a theme. This year, the theme was an unusual material, glass. One event presented for the Wisconsin Science Festival last Saturday revolved around the theme of glass, particularly through music. It was part of UW-Madison's Soundwave series and combined a scientific examination of glass with classical music. Last Friday, in anticipation of the Soundwave's performance on Saturday, host Jonathan Zaroff spoke with Daniel Graboy, curator and founder of the Soundwave series and assistant professor of horn at the UW-Madison School of Music. As a reminder, this event that they're talking about has already passed, but more Soundwave's events are on the horizon. Here's that interview.
First, I've got to ask the really hard question, you know, how come, you know, they're all horns, but the trumpet players didn't name it horn. They called it a trumpet. How come you guys call your French horn, you just call it horn?
No, it's very confusing because actually in the jazz world, a horn basically just means any instrument that you blow in. And of course, the brass instruments are all horns. They evolved out of animal horns. So there's a complicated history and a lot of disagreement about why ours is the French horn and why some people insist on just calling it the horn. I go back and forth, and you know, I'm not too upset when people call it different things. As I don't think it's even worth going into the history of why it might be the French horn, because there's so much disagreement.
Also, you know, I just threw that at your ankles because it's not even the topic today. So thank you so much for that great answer about that. So why just the Soundwave series? It's not always glass, but it always is classical music and science. So and you do classical music. Why did you decide to pair that with science instead of, you know, finance or gender and women's studies, or and why do you think classical music in particular is maybe suited to science more than folk music or other kinds of music?
It actually started a little more haphazardly than that. When I came here, I had already had a half a career as a classical musician, and now I was coming to have a full-time job in an academic institution, and I've always loved learning stuff, and I love being around smart people. And as everybody listening knows, our campus abounds with incredibly smart people. And I thought, well, I like hearing smart people talk about stuff. I like reading books about how the world works. I love learning about scientific stuff. I also love listening to music, and why not try to double the size of our audience by putting them both together on a program? So that was the original germ of the idea. And then as this made its way from my department chair up to what was then called the Arts Institute and eventually over to the Discovery Building, I realized I needed a more formal plan than, hey, let's combine science and music. So I came up with the idea of having themes, and that every anybody who spoke on the series would be able to come at a particular topic, a particular theme from their own point of view, and then I would come at it from the point of view of music. And that turned into Sound Waves, and we got started, I guess, 11 or 12 years ago at the Science Festival back then, talking. Our first theme was music itself. And since then, we've collaborated with almost 50 different departments within UW and a little bit outside UW. So, and it's not always science. We, for instance, we have an art historian speaking on this Sound Waves that's coming up.
All right. I'm interested in the connection between, you know, classical music. One of the things that distinguishes it from many other kinds of music is it tends to be very composed, right? You've got a large orchestra and you've got to coordinate them all. And it's just the tradition of it, right? There's less improvisation. I'm not sure how improvisation even fits into classical music, not being a classical musician. And have you thought about that at all? In what ways science is composed and in what ways improvisation plays a role, and maybe comparing that to classical music?
I hadn't thought about that, but that sounds like a great theme for an upcoming Sound Wave. So stay tuned. We'll probably take on that topic.
All right.
Classical music has in its history had improvisation. In its recent history, less so, but in its upcoming history, more so, because there's so much intermixing of genres now. Classical musicians are very interested not just in playing old works, but in exploring new ideas in music, and that definitely includes improvisation.
Looking back at past Sound Waves and maybe ahead to this one, what do you think you get from this cross-disciplinary approach that you wouldn't if you just attended, looked through one of these lenses, or maybe even looked through all of them, but not at the same event? Do you find there's cross-pollination, and is there discussion between the disciplines at all, or how do they play together?
They play together. There's no discussion, really. So each talk is kind of like a TED talk. It's 15 minutes long. And we get together before the event to figure out the order of talks in a way that would make sense, usually from very broad topics down to more narrow topics, or sometimes from the physical world to the world on Earth to the world of humans, something like that. There's always a flow that makes sense. And then it's just an opening up of the world that maybe we never even thought to question.
Hmm. Yeah, good stuff. And you've got, why did you choose to go at the end of this? You've always got a piece of music, right? But it's not always improvised. Is that correct?
Correct. So with Glass, I had a couple of choices. I could go with the pun and do music by Philip Glass.
Well, we did that on the way in, couldn't resist.
I very much appreciated that. And that it's tricky because it's early in the semester, and I am not even sure if anybody has any Philip Glass music that would be ready to go. A lot of it is for large groups of people, which is tricky to coordinate. And I was trying to think about, well, what are we going to do with Glass? And it occurred to me that, well, there's an instrument called glass harmonica, which is basically like running your finger on the edge of wine glasses. And so, in fact, glass can become an instrument, and it's basically, it's percussionists who use glass in that way. So I got in touch with our percussion professor, Anthony DeSanza, and I told him about what was happening at Sound Waves, and he said, we could buy some big sheets of glass, and we could play them. And I thought that sounded fascinating. I have no idea what it's going to sound like when you beat on a sheet of glass, either with your hand or some sort of mallet or drumstick. And I thought we could mic these pieces of glass and probably find some really, really interesting sound. Of course, there aren't any pieces written for sheets of glass. But that's okay. Percussionists tend to be very adept at improvising. So Professor DeSanza and two of his students are going to come, and they're going to play these pieces of glass. And I don't know about you, but I'm just dying to hear what it sounds like.
Yeah, I love your spirit of jumping in with, you know, both eyes closed to this. It's really exciting, actually. You don't know what people are going to say or how it's going to come out. I'm glad you're not an airline pilot, but I think you found your niche here. What other topics are you looking at moving forward? Anything exciting that's percolating for you, or do you have it all planned out already?
I don't have it all planned out, and we're going to have to see. I think your topic of improvisation will definitely be one that we'll tackle, and I'm really interested in the everyday. So I have this fantasy that I get transported back to the past, and the people in the past ask me about my world. And I say, well, we get around in cars, and they say, what's a car? And I describe that it goes, and they want to know how, and I have no idea. And then they say, well, where does the car go? And it goes on a road. And what's a road? Well, I don't know. It's made of asphalt, but I don't know what that is. And it's got tar and blacktop, and I don't know what that is. So just things about our world that we don't understand, I want to understand them.
I have that fantasy too, but I'm always, you know, there's always a, kind of like an embarrassment factor for me when I don't know those things and I can't explain them. And also a fear that it's like a post-apocalyptic world and I need to know these things to reinvent them and I can't.
I agree with you, but I revel in my own ignorance.
Yeah, I'm learning something about, you know, an approach to life from you. Well, thank you so much for joining us this morning, Professor Grabois.
Thank you for having me.
That was host Jonathan Zaroff in conversation with Daniel Grabois, UW-Madison professor of horn, last Friday in anticipation of a Soundwaves event as part of the Wisconsin Science Festival. Thanks for joining us tonight. That does it for the show. We've been reflecting back on last week's Wisconsin Science Festival. Have a good night. Trust, love's gone behind.